Okay, so it's our Saturday evening gathering, and Ajahn Yani goes away with a few of the members of the community, down with the Buddhist bicycle pilgrimage people. Sort of like a sign of the increasingly there's sort of signs or indications of the pandemic shifting, and their last 2 years bicycle pilgrimage didn't happen, so this year it is, which is great. And I'm starting to get back into circulation again after maybe 2 weeks ago accident. That I'm still sore, but I'm way, way better. And yeah, head-on collision on Tongkai Road. All of a sudden, you know, especially myself as a student of Ajahn Chah, and one of the hallmarks of his teachings, uncertainty or change, and because I've been talking about it and teaching about it for decades now, but it even happens to me too. All of a sudden, just yeah, nice sort of trip into town, go and visit Netika, and in you know, seconds, everything changes, there's a Hummer bearing down on us along Tongkai Road and just smashed into us right head on. So, fortunately, really nobody was hurt. So, our van was totaled. Today I got to ride in our new van. So, and so things are changing again, going back to normal. We've been going into every day now. Somebody from the monastery has been going into visit Metika, who's in her hospice care and winding down. And today she wasn't a happy camper. It was a just you know, body is running its course, so uncomfortable, nausea. And I was thinking of something like pain tends to kind of sharpen you. But nausea really wears on you. So, I think all the things that can go wrong with the human body. And Metika has been very stellar in just being present with whatever's happening. She's not flinching or distracting herself or agitated, and it's a testament to many years of living a life of practice, a life of training, a life of being on the path, that the fruits of sila samadhi paññā, the virtue, meditation, and wisdom is the path that the Buddha laid out for the overcoming of dukkha, of suffering. And sometimes we think practice or spiritual path should have some kind of dazzling result in some way, but just being able to not flinch at the vagaries of the human condition is quite an amazing accomplishment, and to not just succumb to distraction distraction and discontent, because you think, well, what are the hallmarks of the human condition? Humans are mostly kind of distracted and discontent. So this being, just not being drawn into that and pulled into that, just being solid and clear. It's actually quite inspiring. And really, and it's not just, say, meditation. I mean, that's sometimes the presentation of Buddhism in the West is overly identified with say meditation, mindfulness, it's hard to overestimate or to the power comes to mind of the things that Ajahn Chah used to emphasize, that I saw him emphasize over so many years, was the sila of virtue, of integrity, and right view. It's not that having a view. Viewing the world and viewing ourselves through the light of Dhamma, of truth, rather than through the light of our preferences, our fears, our desires, being able to look at and interpret our experience through that lens of truth, but that also requires that kind of steadiness and solidity of a life of virtue, and when the Buddha speaks of sila, it's oftentimes it's translated as morality, because we have to use the English language. But when we think or associate with morality. It's just so moralistic and kind of quite limited, really, because the sila from the perspective of the way that the Buddha approach was much more around, you know, how do we live a life of encourage ourselves to live a life of non-harming, it's not just refraining from doing some bad things, but an ability to not be drawn or to be kind of seduced by our moods of desire, of aversion, of delusion, and to opt for a sense of kindness and care and caring and a certain independence. And it comes to mind is the sutta that the Buddha gave on in giving the laying out a training for the lay people on the lunar observance days and like for the monks, his rules of training are the body of our discipline came from the examples of when, say, misbehavior by the monks and nuns and the Buddha said, no, don't do that. That's really unbecoming. But then with the, say, with the lay community, and it was, what if the lay people took a day and a night, because that was on the Uposatha, on the lunar observance days, for a day and a night, the lay community refrained from taking life and lived as the arahants do, delighting in non-harming. And then that was the origin of the eight precepts. What if the lay people refrained from taking what wasn't given and live like the arahants do, and having that sense of contentment. Same with the in terms of sensuality, just living, not seeking gratification or excitement in sensual and sexual matters, just living simply. What if they were refrain from taking or from speaking untruths, speaking harshly. Refraining from just and just living, delighting in truth. So that is all around simplicity and integrity. So that cultivation of our sila, of our virtue, is not from a moralistic stance of kind of, don't do that, It's more around, you know, what would you rather do? What's more uplifting for the heart? What's more inspiring for oneself and for others? So that living with the that basis of virtue within a day-to-day life, and how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to others. And for all of the, in that Bodhisattva Sutta, the Buddha said, you know, there's a beautiful phrase of, you know, in keeping those precepts, living, say, as the arhats do. And the Buddha says, and it is, and it's of great fruit and benefit, extraordinarily extraordinarily bright and radiant. There's this sentence when you see, and when you meet a human being who has really lived a skillful life, then it brings great fruit and benefit, and there's this brightness of being that is uplifting. And of course we can be doing it for ourselves, to ourselves. Why not? So the cultivation of sila and reflecting on the aspects of, because in when we think of right view, it's not from a philosophical standpoint and having all the Buddhist information down, but it's more how do we view the world and view ourselves in a way that is in line with truth. And of course, for the in Buddhism, the one of the unique perspectives and characteristics is really looking and seeing the aspect of not self, and seeing that kind of empty nature of what we assume to be self, which is not a like a negation or a nihilistic perspective, but is a perspective that allows us to recognize a natural truth. The Buddha when the Buddha talks about not self, and the most common way that he points to not self is looking at the what we take to be self. And of course, what we take to be self is our body, our physical body here. And then the aspects of our mental phenomena, our mind, our emotions. So these five, what the Buddha calls the five khandhas, five aggregates of being, the body, feelings, in the those pleasant, painful, neutral feelings, just on the feeling tone of things, perceptions, associations, memories, Mental formations, which is quite broad in terms of all of our thought, intellect, emotion, even mindfulness is actually a mental formation. Wisdom's a mental formation. Loving kindness and compassion are mental formations. Of course, greed, hatred, and delusion are mental formations as well. So how do we use them? How do we apply them? And look, oh yeah, they're constructed. There isn't a real essence to them. And consciousness itself. That ability to know and experience through the senses, and to integrate it. Like the Buddha, there's a memorable sutta that the Buddha gives on the lump of foam. That's the Buddha's. He's standing by the river Ganges. It's probably in the rainy season. The river's high, so it's kind of churning, and there's this kind of blob of foam floating down the river, and the Buddha, do you see that lump of foam? That's the nature of the body. It's just like that foam. There's nothing that is, it isn't solid, it's empty. It's not of real essence, and it breaks up and changes very easily. And feelings, and feeling is like bubbles in the rain, and when you have a heavy rain, and it forms bubbles on the surface of the puddles and water that's around. And they're constantly popping, and they form and they dissipate, they form and they dissipate. That's like nature of feeling. Feeling is like that. We're just this constant changing nature of feelings. The body, feeling, they're constantly changing and arising and ceasing. There's an empty, not really a solid essence to it. Perceptions, memories, associations, very similar, sanya. And kind of the Buddha compares it to like a mirage. It seems solid. It's like when you're traveling and see something off in the distance, a shimmering of light in the heat. Seems really, really, really solid. But it's not. When you get closer, and it disappears. It always was ephemeral. Mental formations, the Buddha compares to a banana tree, which here in the West we don't really have banana trees, but they can grow quite big in a tropical climate, similar to like a leek or something in the West, where you've got a solid stalk. It grows up fairly tall. But bananas, they're just leaf after leaf after leaf, and that forms a stalk and grows up. Or like an onion, basically like an onion for us. But yeah, so it has this It has a consistency, but it doesn't really have an essence. So when the Buddha speaks of emptiness, it's not that there's nothing there. It's not a nothing. It's not a negation. But it's empty in that there isn't a real solid core. So there's no real solid core to a human body. There's no real solid core to our various feelings arise, or our memories. You think, like for myself, I mean, I'm 73, and 73 years of memories, and what's there? Yeah, not a whole lot, really. Some days less than others. But, and mental formations, these thoughts. We just associate so strongly with our thoughts and feelings in terms of emotion. Now we have a good thought. We think we're okay. We're having a good day. I'm a good person today. We've got a good thought. Thought changes and something else. All of a sudden, my world's falling apart. Because it's just another thought we identify with. Being able to see that empty nature. And consciousness itself. The Buddha compares it to like a conjurer's trick, like a magic trick, where you take the old trope of the magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat. And that's what consciousness does. It creates our experience and ties things together, ties these ephemeral feelings, perceptions, thoughts, emotions, and ties it into an experience. And we think it's really solid and real. And in reality, it doesn't have a solid essence. And it doesn't mean that that's, when we say it's empty, that it's meaningless. In fact, we can start to put it into perspective and recognize what's really meaningful is, how well we live our life and how skillful we are in not believing moods and impressions that just take it down the road of unskillful, unwholesome habits and conditioning. Wisdom is not just having an intelligent thought. It's really living skillfully, living with care and kindness and generosity, and not being shaken by the changing, empty nature of this world and of ourselves. And that's it's really beautiful. It has great fruit, great benefit. Extraordinarily bright and radiant. It's such a wonderful possibility that we have as human beings, to be able to remind, not get too caught up in the external idealization that we have sometimes. I need to be a diligent meditator, or I need to be a moral person, or I need to be a kind of a good Buddhist in some way. Now, all of those are labels. It's the quality of our being is what the Buddha is pointing to. It's why the Buddha keeps pointing all the time back to experience. It's an experiential teaching. It's not and especially when you think of just the limitations of the human condition. This is not an ideal. It's not an ideal form. It's not an ideal situation. But it is an opportunity for really living a wise and skillful life. And that has, it does have great fruit and benefit. To offer that for reflection this evening.